Blog Talk Radio.
Y'all ready for this? Tuesday, here to talk a little bit of football. Welcome to the Gridiron Blitz here on Blog Talk Radio and on the UltimateSportsTalk.com. Thanks for joining us today. My co-host, Oscar Lopez, he will be here very shortly, and Keishi Free, she won't be able to make it out today. Hey, but we're going to go ahead and try to chug along here. I'm your pro football expert, Troy Wilson, also a college football expert. And today we'll be talking a little bit about Super Bowl 50, about some of the things that transpired in there. I know everybody wants to, you know, start getting down on Cam Newton and things like that, and we will definitely delve into that. You know, I believe anyone who watched that game or listened to the press conference, they're going to have their, I guess you'll say, you know, their interpretations of what happened and how he should have conducted himself. We'll delve into that definitely later. Wanted to give a reminder first to visit our Zazzle shop through Thursday. That'll be February 11th. And you can get 15% off of our Love Red Tank. You can use the code ZAZZWALLGIFT, that's Z-A-Z-Z, wall gift. And you can check that out at www.zazzle.com/gridironbeauties. And also today, we got a special guest here. In the NJF huddle, sponsored by Zazzle.com today, 15 after. We're going to have Coach Tui Sioanoa, of the three-time champion LA Temptations. He's a diehard Raiders fanatic, so I definitely look forward to talking to him. We'll also talk about some LFL news for this year and some Super Bowl insights from Coach Tui as well. And, you know, I'm going to just delve right into it. Watching that game, you know, the Twitter line was kind of blowing up. It was a little bit, you know, people were saying, you know, some people were sitting back saying it was a boring game. Me personally, I like defensive matchups. I mean, it's nothing better than a defensive matchup to me. You know, watching these guys hit, and you had two of the better defenses out there that, you know, all year long. I mean, these guys were in the top rankings of the defensive categories all throughout the year. So I definitely enjoyed it. A lot of big hits. You know, these guys just didn't back down at all. You know, you're talking about for Carolina, you had Keekly out there. He had a monster game. What about Coney Ethan? Oh, man, I mean, he showed up. I mean, this guy has put his name on the map. You know, he's a rookie, I believe. I'm sorry, he's a second-year guy out of Missouri. You know, and he kind of, you know, took a bit of a back seat. And, you know, he wasn't as highly considered coming out of Missouri, but this guy showed up. He showed all kind of pass rush skills. He played his heart out there. Josh Norman, all the talking he's done this year, he showed up. I don't even think Demaryius Thomas caught one pass. And then on the defensive side for the Denver Broncos, I mean, you can't say enough about those guys back there. You know, you had Chris Harris playing out there in the corner. Key Tlaib out there. I mean, DeMarcus Ware, glad to see this guy. You know, he played for my hated rival, Dallas Cowboys, but it was good to see this guy, you know, get the ring out there. Most of the people wanted to talk, you know, hear from Peyton Manning, of course. I mean, the guy is Peyton Manning. He's probably in the top five greatest quarterbacks of all time, if not the best quarterback ever. you know, but this wasn't really his game. This was a defensive game. But, you know, to me, it was it had all kind of different storylines. But, of course, the biggest thing people wanted to talk about was how, number one, Cam Newton didn't play very well and how he conducted himself afterwards. Now, me, I'm sitting there looking at it from a standpoint. You know, you have a lot of people that come back and they want to either give an excuse or they want to throw the guy under the bus. On one hand, I understand it. You know, he's frustrated. I mean, they were 15-1. You put in all that hard work to get to that final game, and things just don't go your way. Part of it was because Cam Newton didn't play very well. The other part of it is his offense really just didn't help him out. I mean, this guy had 4 drop passes. You know, and that's pretty frustrating. There were 4 drop passes in big situations where his team could have either, you know, the next move would have been going into the end zone, and they would, you know, been inside the 10-yard line or, you know, something of that nature. Some way you're going to get points out of it, and his teammates are just not capitalizing. They're not, you know, they're not catching the ball. They're missing kicks. That punt return, wow. You don't see stuff like that to happen in the Super Bowl with Super Bowl teams. You know, for this team to come down and to let the guy catch the punt and no one brings him to the ground, they assumed that he wasn't nuts enough to catch the ball and then, you know, try to make a run at it. I guess they assumed he called for a fair catch. But, you know, he caught the ball and, you know, he caught it clean. He took off 61 yards down the sideline. I mean, things like that. And I'm, you know, I'm looking at it like, you know, you're 15-1, the ball bounced your way pretty much all year. And then to have it come down to that, yeah, of course it's frustrating. But I will say this, Cam Newton, league MVP, NFL MVP, which means right now he is considered the best player in the NFL. He is considered the face of the league, a multi-billion dollar league that is the top grossing of all the sports leagues right now. Say this guy's on top of the mountain. In my opinion, you have to conduct yourself better. If you are the face of the league, you can't have a temper tantrum like a petulant child. You just can't do it. You know? I mean, you cannot do that as the face of a company. And the matter of fact, he is. You know? And on one hand, I do understand the other part of it, too. And it's unavoidable, okay? With the climate that we have now, you know, it's kind of a racist, you know, it's kind of race baiting on both sides between whites and blacks and all the things that's transpired in the media. And it's kind of, you know, making a divide and you start to, you know, it's like if anyone criticizes Cam Newton, if you're white, you're considered a racist. If you're black, you're considered an awful time. It's just not that simple. If you take race out of it, the bottom line, did he conduct himself in the right way? And I think everyone can sit back and say no. But at the same time, I guess what the question is would it have been blown up if it was someone else? And for me, honestly, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. The fact of the matter is you need to conduct yourself in a better way. It's that simple. You can't go out there like a petulant child and throw a temper tantrum because things didn't go your way. Oscar, you
there? Yeah, Troy, on that point, a lot of perspectives, you know, a lot of the Panther, you know, supporters for him, you know, different era, different age, different attitude, different person. Then you have, you know, the old school, what you call old school vets, you know, like Deion Sanders and Irvin. And then obviously you had Marshall Faulk comment on that, saying that obviously this is his first defeat in a higher stage, that he'll learn from this. You have a lot of, I think most people were making a big deal out of the fact that it was him at the podium and across from him was, I guess they were interviewing the Broncos, but that happens almost in every Super Bowl. So I don't know why that would be different.
Yeah, and I agree, and I heard the same thing. And, you know, and honestly, I'm just looking at it like this. If you want to make excuses for the guy, you'll find one. And it's just that simple. If the narrative is, oh, you know, it was some guy that was behind him for the Broncos, and he was talking about, you know, how they defended him and how they, you know, was daring him to throw that, and he got upset because they were so close. Well, so what? okay? I mean, listen, you're getting paid over $100 million to endure that kind of thing. That's what you get paid for. Part of what you're getting paid for as the quarterback, and this is what he said. He said he wanted to be the best to play the position. He wanted to be, you know, the guy that's in the, in, you know, to be looked at. He wanted to be a role model for the children. This is, you know, things that he was saying in the interview coming up to the game. So with that being said, if that's what you really want, you have to take that responsibility. It doesn't matter if you, so you're a little uncomfortable. So what? It doesn't, you're a little bit uncomfortable. Somebody's talking behind you, you know. But listen, whether it was someone behind him or not, you have to deal with it. You just do. As the face of the franchise, and right now he is the face of the league, it's kind of an embarrassment. Now I will say this. Cam Newton won't lose a dime off of what he did. And I'm talking about not just, nobody's going to find him, but from endorsements. If someone decides to drop Cam Newton from their endorsement, you're talking about, somebody will snap him up just like that, So I'm not saying he's going to take a hit money-wise, but his reputation has certainly taken a hit. And then also, since he came out today and sat back and said that he has no regrets as far as, number one, how he handled himself in the press conference. And to me, which was even more egregious, is when he didn't dive down on that fumble. They could have kept themselves in the game. He gets that fumble back, but he decided he didn't want to get there. Now, I don't know why he didn't do it. I hate to speculate, but I will anyway. It looked to me like he just didn't want to get hurt. Well, you don't have anything to save yourself for. There is no next week. You get down on the ball, and I'm sitting there screaming this. Because, you see that, and I'm like, you said you wanted this. But it looked like he was like, oh, I don't want any parts of that, So I was at a loss for that, man.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, there's a lot of aspects of the game that went wrong for him that he obviously didn't handle well. And I understand maturity on that end. So I'm not blaming the guy for, how he acted. I am blaming him for maybe not having the folks around him letting him know that this is where you're at now. This is a serious, situation. You're the brand of this league now. And he mentioned it today where he was like, well, it doesn't matter because, when I'm done, there will be somebody else that's the brand of the league. Well, to have that attitude, it's sometimes, that's not going to be very comforting. And you can say, okay, well, that's himself speaking, which is great. But, I mean, he still has a lot of things to grow in terms of a politically correct representation for a brand or something that you represent. So, the brands are not bigger than you. And we've seen that over time with athletes. They will cut you at the knees if you say the wrong thing, if you act the wrong way, if you portray their brand in a different light. It's just the way it is. Sponsorships are cutthroat. So, I mean, nobody's come out to do anything different for them. So, at this point, it's a good sign.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. I mean, and I don't think any of them will. Anyone he's getting an endorsement from, nobody's going to cut him because of this. And again, if they cut him, let's just say if Gatorade decided to cut him, I mean, Powerade's looking right behind him. Propel, whoever. All these guys are coming right behind him. Hey, even Zazzle's going to call him too. Zazzle's like, hey, look, we'll endorse you. That's fine, man. We'll go ahead and put that out there. That's fine. So, I mean, Cam Newton is not going to be short of money, So, and not short of endorsements. But it's just, the way he handled that, man, it really just didn't sit well with me. It just didn't, it was more so his play, and it was like the further you went into that game, you started to see how it was going to be at the press conference. First quarter, the beginning of the game, he's jumping around, he's high-fiving, he's got the pretty cleats on, and then the first quarter, they were okay. Second quarter, starting to get a little ramped up, tie game. Third quarter, he's getting beat down a little bit, starting to get a little frustrated. Fourth quarter, just went right off the rails. And I knew, I said to my wife, I said, listen, this press conference is going to be hell. It's going to be hell. I mean, he is going to go, I'm telling you, somebody's going to go up there and they're going to say the wrong thing, and it's going to be a show up there. And sure enough, he didn't disappoint, because this is the Cam Newton that everyone has said this year, oh, he's matured, he's changed, and they used to show the press conference where he sat back and said, man, I'm going to have a suggestion box, and you guys can go ahead and put stuff in there, because I don't know. That's Cam Newton's gone. He no longer exists. And then he showed up at the end of the Super Bowl at probably the worst time for him.
Yeah, I mean, this really discredits, I've heard, you know, the whole game, because I heard people on Twitter all day, boring, boring, boring game. But when you get down to it, when you play a football defensive game, a boring game, but you have to understand the highlights of these games was the stoppage, the containment, and the effort and blitzes that Wade Phillips put together. I mean, I've never seen anything like that since I've been watching football. But yesterday was basically, if you stop the number one offense in the National Football League yesterday, and I think Phil Simms said it clearly before the Super Bowl, that this was a beast of a defense, and that he would have to come up and have an amazing game, because this was not Seattle and not Arizona. And it proven true yesterday.
Well, here's the deal. When you look at how the
Troy, hold on. Let's bring in Coach Tui Cianoa from the LA Temptation right now. And we'll expand on that right now. Coach Tui, how you doing today? Thank you for coming on and making the time for us. You're on with Troy Wilson, Oscar Lopez on the Gridiron Blitz.
How you doing, guys? Can you guys hear me pretty well?
Yep.
We got you
going,
dialed.
Coach?
Thanks for having me on, guys.
So, Coach Tui, we're talking Cam Newton. Everybody's talking Cam Newton. But we're not talking Denver defense, Coach Tui. So we'll start there with your interview. What did you think of the Denver defense?
Oh, that's exactly how you win games. Defense wins championships. Everybody knows that. And they put it to them. Carolina's unstoppable offense got shut down by that defense. I mean, Von Miller put on a rushing display. I mean, pressuring Cam. I mean, anybody knows you pressure the quarterback in any offense and disrupt that offense, it's going to stop them. And that's exactly what Denver did. They pressured Cam, caused turnovers, set them up for some good plays to get touchdowns and score, and that's what you need to win ball games. So that Denver defense really stepped up.
Did it surprise you that Miller and Ware contained so well? I mean, it looked like the Panther offensive line was just not ready for even the snap modes. I mean, they were getting overpowered, basically. That's what it looked like.
That speed kills. I mean, if you're not ready to handle that kind of speed and technique from those two guys, those are two veterans who have been in the game a while and know exactly what they were coming into. If you can't stop those guys and they're in the backfield with Cam, you know, it's going to cause a lot of havoc back there, and that's exactly what they did, and that's what they needed to win that game.
Troy, you got any questions for a coach here on the Super Bowl?
Yeah, Coach. How's it going, man?
How you doing, Troy?
Pretty well, pretty well. Looks like your season this year will be the most competitive in training camp. Who can the fans look for in terms of names to watch for, a quarterback and running back for your squad?
Well, this year, I don't know if you guys know, but we've lost probably the best quarterback ever to play in the LFL, in Ashley Salerno. So she's not playing for us this year. She decided to retire, and now we have to look for someone to step in and take her spot, and that's no easy task whatsoever. So right now we have two to three girls battling it out for that quarterback position. And we just started training camp last Saturday, and this weekend will be another two more days of training camp. And we're going to see how it goes. And those quarterbacks are Jane Caldwell. She's a former backup for the Atlanta Steam. She's coming here to play for us. And we have Katie Finley, who was also the backup quarterback for the Seattle Mist last year. She's here. She's going to be moving here also. So those guys will be in camp coming up next weekend. And we have our backup from last year, Kiara Patterson. So we have three girls who are going to be battling it out. And it's going to be interesting to see which one wins that starting position. But even if none of them, I mean, if the other two who don't make it as the starter can turn around and still play and start on our team, either on a different position at offense or defense. So that's a good thing.
Yeah, it's good to have players that can be interchangeable, you know, amongst different positions, man. You know, having that kind of depth is definitely imperative. But what kind of, as far as like the defensive side, what kind of schemes are you guys going to implement this year?
Well, this year, after what happened to me in the All-Star game, I was never a fan of playing man defense in this league in all the 7 years that I've been here. But now schemes are changing, and I've got to adapt also. So now I'm going to be implementing man defense on this. A lot of cover one, you know, we'll do zone every now and then, and then we'll add man in certain situations. But, yeah, we're definitely going to be running a lot of man, and I need a lot of players who can cover, who are good at covering, which is what we've lacked, you know, over the years because we never played man. I stuck to zone pretty much for every year that I've coached the LA Temptations. So, yeah, after the All-Star game, it opened my eyes up to it's time for us to change, and we need to adapt, and I'm going to man sometimes this year.
Yeah, so if you're going to be playing cover one, I'm assuming you're going to have a free safety that can range back there pretty well, huh?
Yeah, pretty much. My other safety is going to be pretty much like a rover linebacker covering, so it's going to be pretty tough because these girls have never done that before. But Seattle did a great job of playing that coverage last year, cover one, with Danica Brace as the rover. And I mean, they really did a great job on it. And you know what? It doesn't hurt to try it and then see if it works for us. And we have the athletes to do it. So I'm going to give it a go, and we'll see how it goes. And we open up against Seattle on the 24th. I'm going to run their own defense on them.
Good deal. So, I mean, you've been with the LFL since 2008. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Came in when it first started.
So what are your thoughts in the LFL now, I mean, after six seasons? I mean, how have you seen the progress come up as, you know, toward the game and also as far as, like, how the players have adapted to playing?
How it's changed?
Yeah, I mean, since, you know, since the beginning, I mean, the around six seasons, but now it seems like, you know, it's been a lot of changes since then. But how the league has ran.
Yeah, the athletes, for one thing, has changed. This game has just went from – these girls were pretty much novices when they came into this game, you know, amateurs, still learning because a lot of them had never played football before. And now you see just how much the athletes have changed and grown. The athleticism now, they're playing harder, faster football just like you need – just like the men, you know. And that's – in order for this league to survive, we have to have that kind of competitiveness and that kind of skill level for these – for this league to survive. So, I mean, if anything's changed, watch the power play now of every girl that's out there from every other team on this league and see just how incredible now that the game has changed just by the way they play it, how the coaching has changed. And it's only making this game better. And it's going to, we hope we have seven years, I mean, already. So hopefully we can go another three, make it 10.
Good deal. Oscar?
All right. Coach Tui, I don't want to go on a bad note here, but franchise-wise, you've missed the boat in terms of, you know, being the staple before that. I know you were part of the run, you know, with the three championships, and all of a sudden the last couple seasons, you know, the Blitz and the Mist have really stepped up their game in terms of, you know, playoff appearances and really get into it. And you've been a part of that well on the loss side. So, you know, I'm pretty sure you can probably relate to Cam Newton at this point without pouting. I know you're not a person that pouts on it, but big time players stepped up, and you know Danica was one of those players that you've met and confronted and faced a lot of times. So what do you say about the franchise right now? I know it's a big goal to overcome and to sit here and say we're gonna win, but I mean that's your mindset always. But uphill battle you think this year in terms of the West, because Las Vegas is no longer here, but you do get Dallas and Austin, and it looks like they have some pretty good talent there too.
Yeah, we're looking forward to playing all those guys. And every year, we play Seattle. It's a tough game against Seattle every time. And every year that we've won the championship, it's always pretty much been down to us and Seattle in that playoff spot to see who goes. And we've just been fortunate and lucky enough to win those games to go to the championship. And last year was no different. Actually, yeah, you know, it wasn't any different. We went to the playoffs. We met up with Seattle again. But this time they got the nod to go. I mean, we blew it in the last minute of the game. We could have won the game if we would have scored, but we fumbled at the five-yard line. And, you know, that would have sent us to the championship. But it's always between us and Seattle. And I love that rivalry we have. So it's great. But so far as the franchise is concerned, we're still in it. We're always still in it every year. We have a great – we have all athletes all over Southern California. So we're always still going to be building a great organization over here. You know, it's just a matter of us playing our game, taking it to the other teams and letting them know that we, you know, we're the LA Temptations. We don't bow down to anyone. And this year we plan on going for that fourth like we do every year. And we hope to be there. And I'm looking forward to playing Austin and Dallas, who came back this year. And I've seen the athletes there. They have a lot of veterans in Dallas. And a lot of them have played in Vegas. And we have a couple of players on Dallas's team now who played for me last year, who transferred out to Dallas. So I'm looking forward to facing them again.
Now, Coach Dewey, the coaching regime for you, obviously with Coach Bissoff, you were part of that, you know, staple. So on your coaching side of things, what can you tell us about who's on your coaching staff that will obviously implement some things that we're going to be either surprised or amazed or completely just wowed by in terms of your coaching staff that's helping you out?
Well, I've been lucky enough this year to get a hold of a friend of mine. He played a couple of years behind me at Carson High School. His name was Lotario Rochelle, and he played at Fresno State, and he got drafted by the San Diego Chargers and played 2 to 3 years with the Chargers, and he's my wide receivers coach right now. So I've been lucky enough to land him on my staff, and I have he's a DB wide receiver coach out of Chico State. His name is Richie Jacobs. And before, we've never really had a lot of coaches to help us out. It's always been just pretty much me and Biz. So this year, I've went out and found some coaches who are interested in helping us get that fourth championship. And I found Lotario Rochelle, Richie Jacobs, and my new offensive coordinator. His name is Jeff Loudon. He'll be implementing the offense this year for us. So with us four, it's really going to help, you know, train our girls the way we need them and to come out there and show everybody what we have. But I've been lucky enough to find these guys to come out here and volunteer their time and sacrifice their time to come out here and help me out.
Now, Coach Tui, last season the fans experienced, in 2015, they experienced more of a rivalry format, you know, where it was a couple more games played. It was kind of more exciting that way. I know that they scaled back to the original schedule that you have, you know, where you have two home games, but it was literally almost three home games, which is a six game season. How did you react to that in that year? Was it more exciting to have the three games at home and three in away?
For me, I wasn't too crazy about that, playing the same team three times in a row. It gets boring after a while. There's no motivation to it. I mean, it's fine when you're in the NFL and you play two conference games against the same teams, which is cool. That's fine. But three times, you know, it kind of wears you out, you know, and I don't know about the rivalry sense and how it helps that one, but three games is just too much. Two would have been fine. I wish we had another team to make it even better. But yeah, when you play the same teams three in a row, it just doesn't have that feel to me. But, you know, it is what it is, and we had to do it, and it worked out in a way. So, but yeah, as far as I was concerned, I wasn't too crazy about it.
So, Coach, you have the first Hall of Famer in the league. Can you tell us a little bit how proud you are in terms of you and obviously the Temptation to have Monique Axiola named the first Hall of Famer?
Monique has been with me since 2008, and she's just one incredible athlete who just doesn't give up. I mean, she's been through multiple knee surgeries. I mean, one year she literally had to sign her life away saying that, you know, she would play knowing that she has a full injury to her knee and that the league, you know, just didn't want to be held responsible, you know, because it was kind of dangerous for us to put her out there. But she wouldn't give up. So she came out there and she kept playing. And those are the kind of players you look for and want. And not only is she determined, I mean, she's a smart player. And I can count on Monique on anything. She's like having an extra coach on the field. So if I'm like looking somewhere else, watching my corners or my DBs, I can trust Monique to run the front three and call what I need to be called because she knows exactly how I call my game. So I could trust her to do that, and I've done that a few times to let her call the defense while I'm over there scouting an offense real fast to see what they're doing to make changes. So she's an incredible athlete, one of the best ever. a woman you can trust to really go out there and lead a team. And then everybody looks up to her. You know, she's a great role model for a lot of football players out there. So I'm proud and honored to have been her coach.
Are we seeing the second coming of Gorman with Brace in your eyes?
With Gorman?
I don't think she's playing.
Oh, you're talking about Danica Brace coming in like Gorman. Yeah, pretty much. Danica Brace has just changed the entire game, period. I mean, her game level, when she first came into the league, she was pretty much like an average linebacker. But then all of a sudden, when you put her at safety, she can see the field more and envision. And when she does that, she's got a clear, direct line to go find that ball. And we realized that when I put her at safety, and she could hunt down that ball faster at safety than she could at linebacker. And that's just awesome of her. And she's really changed the level of the game. Liz Gorman was a great player when she played, but Danica has excelled that and passed that. I mean, when you get a defensive MVP and the league MVP in the same year, that shows you just how far your game has come. And she's just an incredible athlete. I was proud to have her in Las Vegas and found that talent like that from her and noticed that what she could do. So you can pretty much see how upset I was knowing I was going to face her in Seattle, and I knew what she was going to do.
Now, you had Michelle Angel last year as quarterback, and we're talking about how the transitions here with the three choices that you have to make. So if you had to go with a choice today, I know, you know, it's not fair to the girls, but if you had to go to a choice here, are you going with a mobile quarterback or are you going with a pocket passer?
Well, right now we only have a pocket passer. They're not really too mobile right now. Their footwork still needs a lot of work. But if I had to make a choice, I'm going with the pro quarterback, pro style. Just sit back there, be patient, let your line block for you, trust in them, and just get that ball off as quick as possible.
Now, Jane, you said is coming over to help you out. You got Nasira Johnson also from the Steam coming over. Can you tell us a little bit about those additions and how they're going to, you know, work out with you in terms of your scheme?
In the 7 years we've had here in the LFL with the Temptations, we have never had a back that has speed, can slash, cut, and dash the way Nasira does. Nasira Johnson is a blessing in disguise for us. We've never had that type of back, which is why it was always hard for us to defend any team that had a back like that, because we couldn't practice against something like that. And to have her on our squad this year and see her do what she does on the field is incredible, and we're happy to have her. And you're going to see some big things out of that back, because she's going to be running the ball a lot for us and taking some pressure off our passing game.
Now, at receiver, you guys had Monica Jaramillo, and you had a couple faces on receiver. You had Kim Chase that's left. You also had Amanda Ruler that's left. So how are you going to mend up the receiver end of things for yourself in terms of, you know, obviously quarterback's the first concern that you have to get in employment, but in terms of the receiving core, what's intact still?
Oh, we're in deep with receivers right now. I mean, with Vegas shutting down, those athletes are all now over here with us, coming over here to try out. And Cynthia Schmidt, and I have Tony Tora Kelly. She used to play for Dallas when Dallas still had a team at the beginning. She's now here. I got Cynthia Schmidt. I also got this receiver who came out of Australia, who played for the Australian LFL team out there, and her name is Kiana. She's just awesome. I got a three receiving corps who tall. They're about 6 foot each, and you know those are the big targets you want to see going downfield as a quarterback. You know, and I also have Brittany Henderson, also out of Las Vegas, a little speedster receiver with great hands. So as far as receiving is concerned, I'm not too worried about the receiving core right now, because we got some big shoes to fill, and then those guys are going to fill it big time.
Now, on defense, what are you bringing on defense that the fans can look forward to? Obviously, Seattle being your biggest rival, and I'm pretty sure Michelson's going to be, I wouldn't say scared, but he's going to be anticipating what you're going to bring in terms of a front four or a front five. So who can we look out for in terms of defense right now that you see that's going to be some key for you, besides your staple veterans that are probably going to make the squad as well?
Well, you can't, you know, you can always count on Mo Gaxiola making big plays and Naja Christmas. Last year she had a great year coming into the to the game, and this year she is even stronger and faster. And I'm looking for big things out of her. I told her, I want at least 15 sacks out of you this year. And she's like, Coach, we only play 4 games. I go, I don't care. I still want 15 sacks out of you. So I'm looking forward to seeing what Nazi can do this year, because just her coming into camp, I was looking at her, and her physique and her speed and her strength is just unbelievable right now. So I'm looking for big things out of her. I guess still got to fill my safety spots because Danielle Harvey was hurt in the All-Star game, and she's rehabbing her knee right now, so I got to fill in some safety spots. Losing Kim Chase to Atlanta at defensive end was pretty huge, so I'm also looking for a big defensive end right now too. But I think we found some, and some rookies who are also trying out for the team right now who I brought into camp, and we're going to be surprised about who I bring in.
Is Chelsea Hart coming back at this point?
Oh, definitely. You know, those are my two count-on corners right there, Chelsea and Ogham. Ogham Tchindu, Chelsea Hart, those are the two stable veterans that you can always count on out there. They're two of the toughest that have ever played for the Temptations, and I'm sure a lot of people, they have a lot of fans out there who can't wait to see those guys come back.
So, Coach, in the 7 seasons that we have here, nobody thought you'd be here. Did you even think you'd be here?
Be the coach?
Just in general with the league, not just necessarily the coach, but, you know, because when it started out, everybody had so much criticism of this league, and we all know the backstory of how everything evolved, but we're here 7 seasons out, and it seems like the fanfare is growing. You're on Fuse TV, you're on YouTube. I mean, you still have sustainability. So did you even think it was going to be this excitement and this big?
I see. Yeah. You know what? There's so much criticism and so much people out there who doubted this league and what it was all about. But, you know, our owner, he had an idea. He came out with it and he stuck with it. I mean, he fights hard for this league, you know, and coming down the road, I'm sure a lot of people thought we'd fold after the 3rd year, but to see us keep going and growing, it's a great surprise for all of us, and it's great for the girls. I mean, nobody thought we'd get this far, and here we are 7 years down the line, and then now we're on Fuse. Like you said, we got our games back on Fuse TV, and that is helping push this league a lot more. Plus, the reality show that came out is even pushing this league a lot more. So, yes, you know, big things are happening, and when you work hard enough to push something you love, it's only going to make things better. And you see how many players still come out every year to come out and play for this league, regardless of all the talk of, you know, how bad things are. And it's really not. It's just a man striving to make things better. And here we are 7 years, and we're still kicking. All those other leagues are all gone. Those fake leagues that try to come out, they've all dropped out. They've seen how hard it is. But here we are, 7 years down the line, and we're still kicking, and we're still fighting, and hopefully things are even going to be better in the next few years.
So, Coach, at this point, we have the first female, you know, intern in the NFL. We have the first female coach in Buffalo. When will we have the first female coach in the LFL?
Well, hopefully soon. You know, I'm all for it. I'm 100%. Supportive of any woman coach that we bring into this league, and I think it's what we actually need, more women coming into this league to help coach football, to get these girls going and motivated. And, you know, I always thought Mo Gaxiola would be a great coach. When she decides to retire, I'm like, Mo Gax should be the first coach to come in here and take over a franchise. I mean, she's experienced so much as a player and experienced a lot from other coaches that she's went through. 1, 2, 3 different 4 head coaches in all 4 championship games. So that she's won. She's the only player who's ever won 4 championships, LFL championships. So she has the experience behind her. But, yeah, this league totally needs women, more women in here to coach, and I'm all for it, 100%.
And given the exposure you guys are getting now, I mean, you are really, I've told people before, you guys are really the NFL of the women's game at this point. I mean, this is no mock on the traditional game, but your format obviously has garnered more acceptance in terms of viewership and everything else. So do you see the growth at this point, a lot faster growth than it was in the beginning?
I do, you know, because our name is really getting out there more, and more women are starting to see it, and identify with it, and, you know, it's something they want to be a part of. So, yeah, we're growing pretty big right now. We hope to get bigger. So hopefully we'll just keep pushing and, you know, keep getting our name out there. The more and more we do, better off this league is going to be, and more women are going to want to be a part of it. And that's the whole thing. That's what football is all about, to provide a stage for all these athletes out there that don't have a stage to come out there and show their talents. And we do. So hopefully it all works out in the next few years.
Now, I know internally the league has changed a lot in terms of the logistics. They've made changes because you have to. Smaller arenas, you were at a bigger stadiums. So you're back at Citizens Bank Arena this season. So what can the fans expect in Ontario?
I love playing in Ontario. I mean, it just brings the fans closer to the game because they're right there next to the wall. And pretty much the plays take place right in front of them. I love playing on grass when we played at the Coliseum because it's a lot safer for the girls. It's a lot softer, more open space for them to create big plays. And in the arena, it's a lot smaller and confined. But either way, the fans can expect great, hard-hitting, smash-mouth football from us. You know, when they come to our games, they should know exactly what to expect. We're the Raiders of the LFL. I mean, we wear the same colors, but I come out there with the same attitude. And, you know, we're just coming out there to hurt people legally. You know, we don't cheat. We're out there to hurt people and hurt teams and make them know who we are. We carry that silver and black pride strong, Temptation Nation. So that's what they can expect from us when we come out there and step in that arena. Citizens Business Bank is a great place. We have great fans that come out there and support us. So it's going to be big when we show up against Seattle.
Now, the best rivalry in the league is obviously your guys. You know, it's no different than, you know, Denver Raiders. So, Coach, in terms of the season, let's break it down fully here. So we're expecting changes at quarterback. You're making some choices on wide receiver. Your defensive core is probably intact with some veterans, as we can generalize it here. And you have some coaching that is obviously going to help you elevate the team to a better state. So the rivalry here is Seattle-LA is going to be that's what we're going to expect, and we're going to expect, obviously, smash-mouth football, right?
Pretty much. I mean, I've known Chris Michelson since he came into this league. We both came in at the same time. And I pretty much know his game, and he knows our game very well. So it makes for a great rivalry. And, you know, we're always the tops in there. But, you know, we don't like to look past any other teams. I don't want to look past Dallas, and I don't want to look past Austin because I have yet to see what those guys are going to bring to the table. But you can always pretty much count on us in Seattle to go out there and fight it off. And I hope, again, it's going to be us in the end fighting to go to see who goes to the playoffs.
Coach, I will have to bring you beyond the LFL here, but my Rams are back in L.A. I know your Raiders were thinking of going to Vegas. What's your perspective at this point in terms of where the Raiders land? I know the Chargers are staying put or whatever, but the return of the Rams, I don't know if Southern California can – I know they left once. I'm at the point where they got to be so competitive because L.A. is so buzzed about you got to be good in L.A. in order for them – people to come out and see you. So what's your feeling on the landscape of the change in terms of the triangle that was the Chargers, the Raiders, and the Rams?
You know, it's about time they bring pro football back to L.A., and having the Rams come back couldn't be more huge for this city, and they need that, you know. And having the Rams come back, it's big. And Jeff Fisher, you know, he's a California guy, and he's from here. So to have him come back home is a big thing for everyone. And, you know, the city of L.A. supports it. They love it. I mean, they're glad that the Rams are here. And as far as the Raiders go and going to Vegas, there's a reason why the NFL has never had a pro team in any sport go to Las Vegas. So I don't know if that's going to pass because I've never heard of any team going to Vegas there, but we'll see. Until I see it signed on the bottom line, then I'll believe it. But as of right now, I don't believe that the Raiders are going to be going to Las Vegas, even with all the talk and everything, everybody saying, oh, yeah, they're moving. They've been trying to move to here. They've been trying to move to Vegas. I even heard they were going to Oklahoma. But like I said, until I see it signed on the dotted line, then I'll believe it. But as far as the Rams are concerned, hey, I'm all for it 100%. I'm glad these guys are here. The city of L.A. needs pro football. I think they're going to get a great crowd out there supporting these Rams. you know, they have so many Rams fans here that have been dying for them to come back, and I think they're going to show it in full force on their first game at home.
Now, before we let you go, the Eastern Conference of your league has been shuffled. You know, Omaha was pretty horrible last year. Atlanta being pretty much the staple, like Seattle. You got New England coming in, the New England Liberty. And then you have, you know, it's just a different format. Chicago is in transition, obviously, you know, with the changes as well at quarterback and things that are happening. So who do you see in the East that would come out front at this point, if you had to say a team?
Well, you can't take away anything from Chicago, regardless of them losing their quarterback, because I'm sure they'll find someone to replace her. I mean, Coach Hack is an incredible coach. He knows exactly how to put in players and fill in players who he's lost. But the one team that's impressed me the most, and they do every year, is Atlanta. And Dakota Hughes is such a phenomenal quarterback. I mean, she's great. She's smart. She's fast. She understands the game. And, you know, Coach Dane Robinson out there, he really showed me. He's the one that opened up my eyes to why I need to change my defense, you know. So Atlanta is the team for me right now to pick as far as who's going to be tops in the East. I'll take Atlanta. But like I said, don't count out Coach Hack of the Chicago Bliss, because they're the more experienced team. They've been, you know, they've handled Atlanta every year that they've played them. But, you know, the changing of the guards are coming. So you never know. This year might be that time that Atlanta finally upsets them. And I've seen a lot of their players and rosters that are taking place and changes over there in Atlanta. And, hey, they're going to have good things going on down there.
Now, Coach, we get down to that side of the league, and it's at one point it was just two teams, which is Chicago and Atlanta right now. And Atlanta, to your point, Dane Robinson has a lot of decisions to make, probably similar to you in terms of a lot of veterans mixed in new players. Formulating this roster, you got to go from what 40 to 20 at this point within what by the end of February before the 30 days before the season starts. Is that going to be tough for you, you think, at this point, or is it tough already?
It's been tough since minicamp when I had 46, close to 50 players come into minicamp. We've never had that many in minicamp before. So, I mean, that just goes to show you how much athletes we had coming out there, and it was tough for us to make a decision on who to cut. But I did. I whittled it down to I only took two out of that minicamp, and now we've invited all the veteran staffs that we wanted to come back. And now I'm in training camp with 30 players. So now I got to bring that down to 20 in the next few weeks. So I'm looking forward to, you know, the competition that I'm about to see in these next 2 weekends coming up in training camp. And it's going to be tough because there's going to be a lot of veterans who we're going to have to let go. And I mean, that's what you want. We want to fill that field out with the best players. And I pretty much feel I got 30 great players, but we can't carry 30. So We've got our hands full as a coaching staff right now to figure out who we're going to put on that 20-man roster.
Coach Stewie, do you think the league will get to a practice squad state at this point, or is it just mutual for players just to say, well, if you need me, I'll be around? Is that how it's working now?
Not yet. We don't have that practice squad state. And I mean, that would be great if we could. If we could get something like that, but, you know, budget-wise for equipment and everything like that, you know, it's tough to have that many players out there. But we're working on it, you know. Hopefully things will change down the line where we can bring in more players and practice with more players. So we'll see. But as of right now, it is the way it is, and we run it. It's being run the way that works so far. So we hope that maybe down the line more players will be able to come and practice and be a part of our squads.
Now, in terms of you guys are going to be out on all over LA at this point, and promotion wise, or is it going to be Ontario a lot more? I know you guys last year were everywhere, pretty much on fairs and stuff like that. Are you guys doing the community thing the same way this year?
Yeah, pretty much. Cause, I mean, we got to cover all of LA. You can't just focus your spot on just Ontario only, just because we play there. We got to spread out everywhere and do marketing. You know, we got to let everybody know that we're back in Ontario, and hopefully get those fans up there to help support. But, you know, Ontario's got a great crowd just in terms of the city alone where they are. And we need to pull more of this L.A. crowd out here. So, yeah, we're going to be working all of L.A. over downtown, you know, everywhere else surrounding Hollywood, all those areas out here. So we'll be out there, out and about. We'll let you guys know. We'll be putting it up. Hopefully you guys can come out and help support.
Awesome. So, Coach Tuohy, thank you again for making the time for us. We really appreciate it. Continued success. We're looking forward to L.A., Seattle. It's been the best matchup in the LFL for the last three seasons, and I know you and Coach Michelson are going to, you know, put on a good display, and obviously your players and their players. And, you know, who doesn't want to go see Danica Brace and Monique Axiola? So it's going to be great.
Thank you guys for having me on. Yeah, it's going to be a great game. I'm looking forward to it. And I want to thank you guys for supporting women's football in general altogether. You know, there's not a lot of people out there who do it, but you guys are. So thank you to all you guys out there at Gridiron Beauties.
You got it.
Thanks, Coach
Tuohy. Thanks for coming by.
Have a great evening. Bye. Thanks for making the time. And we will look forward to another chat in the midseason to see how you guys are rolling and how the league evolves this year with the new franchises. So thank you again for making the time, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Take care, guys.
Bye-bye. All right, Troy, that was Coach Tuasiano, and it's three-time L.A. Temptation LFL champions. They were the first team to set the bar. He was part of the team that set the bar. A lot of players have gone through him, amazing players, especially, you know, you have to put at the top the first Hall of Famer, which is Monique Axiola, and he's obviously dived into all these struggles and everything that she's gone through just to, you know, make a name for herself in this league and obviously put herself in the Hall, you know, the number one player in the Hall of Fame to be announced by this league. So that's got to be a huge honor.
Oh, yeah, you know, that just means you're the GOAT, you know. It means you're the greatest of all time, you know, especially at this point, being in this fledgling league. But, you know, you start to see it. I mean, as you said before, that the LFL is the NFL women's football. And so to have her, winning as many championships as she did, she's won four titles. I mean, she definitely deserves to be in there. So, you know, definitely hats off to Monique.
Now, Troy, the LFL season, we don't know if it'll be on Fuse. It looks like it'll be back on Fuse again. So we're pretty excited, like I said to Coach Tuohy, pretty excited to see how this league evolves this season. There are obviously more viewership, more exposure. They brought in different franchises. You got literally a Boston franchise, which is New England Liberty. And so we're looking forward to see how that turns out. A lot of veterans there as well with Liberty and a mix of new blood. So we'll see how that turns out. But this league is kind of addictive in that way, I guess. Like he said before, they play really hard ball. So when you come to see them, it's pretty explosive. And give credit to where it's due. Obviously, Danica Brace, no different than Cam Newton last year. Just unfortunately, she's on the defensive side of the ball, not the offensive side of the ball. But she played lights out, and she deserved the MVP. So look forward to seeing her again this year and see how explosive she'll be.
Yeah, especially having it being televised. I mean, you know, the thing about football junkies are that they just want to watch good football. And so if you put it out there, I mean, people are going to watch. And, you know, I think just this upcoming season, it's been a lot of attention being drawn to it. A lot of people were talking about it initially when it was the, you know, lingerie football league. And, you know, then they, you know, people started to take a look at it and watch an actually quality, you know, football, like actual real football. So, I mean, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to watch every game. So I'm definitely going to keep my eye out for the schedule. And I'll have Fuse all keyed up in every single game. So I'll be ready to do it.
Yeah, we're going to look forward to that, Troy, because you being the college guru, it'll be nice to break down 7-on-7 football instead of 11-on-11.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You got more points being scored, too. I can't wait to watch.
So, Troy, we were talking Cam Newton before Coach Tuohy. So let's continue on with the conversation. But let's go on the other side of the ball. Von Miller, Marcus Ware, I mean, they just did an amazing job of containment. They put, I would have to say, they crushed Cam Newton's spirits pretty early in this matchup.
Yeah, and the thing about both of those guys are, I mean, this entire year, and it's not even fair because, I mean, again, this league, they push the, you know, the envelope, they push the narrative when it comes to the offense. I mean, everyone wants to see these high-scoring games, but these guys have been doing this all year, and they were a dangerous combo even last year, you know. But, you know, DeMarcus Ware was a little bit banged up, and he came into this year, he wanted to get a little healthier, and he did that. And he was able to look like DeMarcus Ware of the old, and just to have Von Miller on the other side, the guy is a freak. I mean, it's not even that Reimers or Michael Orr were that bad. And then Reimers is the right tackle for the Carolina, and Michael Orr is the left tackle. It's not that these guys are that bad. It's just that, listen, Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware are just that good. I mean, coming off the ball, they were unblockable. I mean, if you watch the, you know, the Patriots game, the Patriots could do nothing with these guys. And when you have two guys that had come off the edge, I mean, it's basically, you know, the old adage, pick your poison. You can't double team both guys, you know, because then you got Derek Wolfe, and you know, you got these guys up the middle. I mean, this the defense alone is just awesome. And then not to mention, you know, it's just like, you know, you had the Giants in the past. They had that formidable defensive line. But the difference with Denver was that they had that formidable defensive line, and they also have linebackers that could cover anyone. And their defensive backs, one-on-one. I mean, these guys, they can cover anyone also. And they're three deep at the defensive back, the corner. To me, and I know, you know, they started to talk about, you know, best defense. To me, man, I mean, just looking at it, they look like it, man. I mean, it's not even hard to argue that one. The way that they've played this entire season, especially in the postseason, it looked like they were one of the better defenses of all time. It definitely started with that pass rush.
I was on Twitter, Troy, and somebody said, if they hold them to seven, you can just see that the heartbreak in every Carolina Panther fan. Because they were scoring over 30 points. And for Denver to just go field goal and a touchdown with these guys.
Yeah, and you know what? I said the same thing, man. Because just think about how pretty much this was Carolina's MO this year, right? Carolina would start fast, and then they would let teams catch up. You saw it in the Giant game. You saw it in the Atlanta games. You saw that a lot this year, where they would, you know, allow teams to basically get back into the game. And when I saw Carolina starting slow, you know, I said, listen, if they don't start picking it up, they're not going to get back into it. They're not a good second half team. They just aren't. I mean, if you look at the statistics, I mean, I don't have them in front of me, but just from the eye test alone, it looks like, you know, either they get tired or they take the gas off, you know, take the foot off the pedal. But they're not a very good second half team. And when I saw that they didn't, you know, put up enough points in that second half, and then compound that with the defense that Denver has, I knew at that point Carolina was in trouble.
Now, when you're the secondary, to me, was no different than what Seattle did versus Denver during that Super Bowl. The only difference is I think they were just playing a lot more close man-to-man, that there was no separation. And then, obviously, you know, the pressure coming up from the front just didn't allow him to get any type of, you know, rhythm for him to throw. So they were always, you know, two steps ahead of him. And then, obviously, everybody was covered. So containment was basically, they just wrapped him up like a burrito pretty much all day.
Yeah, I mean, you got Aqib Talib out there in the corner. He's been, you know, he's been doing it for years. Chris Harris, you know, great corner. He didn't play in that Seattle game, as did Von Miller. Von Miller missed that game as well. And then you also had Roby, who was the third corner, and he's a rookie. And they had all these guys playing bumper run the entire game, and no one is impressed with Carolina's receivers. I mean, you got to know that just going into it. But they did their job, and everybody was saying, you know, about, you know, Cam Newton kind of carried this team. But Olsen, you know, again, Denver's linebackers can cover. Their safeties can cover. Olsen didn't have a good game either. You know, Olsen was pretty much invisible. I mean, they really took that guy out of the game. I think that was the key, you know, with their corners playing bump and run and man-to-man, and their safeties and linebackers basically took them out of the game with Brandon Marshall, Trevathan. These guys, they didn't have, I mean, Olsen didn't get a sniff of the ball. I think he maybe had like one or two catches, but they weren't big plays at all. And I think that was the biggest difference in that game because, I mean, Olsen has been his go-to guy the entire year, and they took him completely out of the game.
Yeah, I was one of those guys on FanDuel who was very angry with Olsen. Just didn't give me points.
Right.
You know what I mean? What's going on here? And Stewart, I mean, Stewart, I don't know if it was the injury with the knee early on afterwards, but Stewart was probably the only effective thing that they had going all throughout the game. I mean, he had some good runs. He put him in the end zone. But other than that, that was the only positive out of the whole game. The rest of the game was overwhelmed by Denver's defense.
Oh yeah. I mean, Denver's defense is just they were lights out. I mean, to do what they did to Cam Newton, you got to take your ass off to these guys. I mean, they just played after the game.
Now I was on Twitter and somebody said, "Do we give the pacifier now to the baby after the press conference? Because obviously he needs a spanking, and he got one."
Yeah, and you know I kind of saw it coming. You know, I mean. The entire year, I mean, what was this whole thing? People had a problem with him dabbing, dancing 20 seconds. To me, that was the most annoying thing. I don't care if you dance when you're in the end zone. Dance all you want. Take selfies on the sideline with your teammates when you're all the way up by 30 points. Fine, I don't care, you know. But your narrative, Cam Newton, was, if you don't want me to dance, stop me. Well, that's what Denver did. He said, don't get upset. You know, don't catch a little attitude when it didn't go your way. You got to be a professional. I mean, listen, you called it, and that's what happened. So they stopped you.
Now,
but, you know, you can't be upset about it, man.
There was a meme out there, Troy. I lost the link on it. There was a meme out there that said the Denver defense found some kryptonite on the way to the stadium, and it just basically that's what it was.
Yeah, basically, you know. And then, you know, all the other memes where you have, you know, Michael Jordan, the crying Jordan faces that were showing up all over. But Cam Newton did a Superman thing, and then you had the crying Jordan face that was underneath the shirt. That was the best one for me. I love that one. But, yeah, I mean, that's the ire that you draw when you lose, especially when, you know, you've done a whole lot of talking.
Yeah, and in the biggest stage – the biggest stage here is just the fact that, you know, to his point, you set up for a goal and you get to this stage and then you end up meeting a better opponent, an opponent that was hungrier. And that's really what it came down to, like you said, because Von Miller and everybody else on that defense, some of them didn't play and they got crushed by Seattle. And they know the feeling to get crushed 48-8, you know, on a great defense by Seattle to stop. This was kind of a mirror image of that game in a lot of ways. You know what I mean? To contain, and that it really was a mirror image of more hunger, more enthusiasm. And then you can tell, I was telling my buddies here at home that during the week of the Super Bowl, you know, celebration, you heard nothing from Denver defense. You hear nothing. You know, we're going to take care of business. Nothing like that. All they said was, we can't wait to play this game. And that's it. All through the week, Carolina was like so pumped. You know, we're coming in. We're doing our thing. And we're going to be okay. And so I think when you get down to the level of expectation that this brand puts on an individual, you know, you have the Brady, the Manning. I think we just got so used to the Brady, the Manning way, that when he decided to not be that way, I don't know if you want to call it a shock factor, but it certainly was a reaction that everybody got, including Hall of Famers, you know, like Deion Sanders, Michael Irvin, but I think Marshall Faulk said it best. It's a process that you can't understand unless you lose big time. And so, you know, I think that's where it breaks down for me. It's like, I'm not criticizing the guy for not wanting to talk and not wanting to interact with the media. I'm criticizing the guy. You are the MVP of this brand. And since, you know, day one, you decided that you were the best player in this league and you were honored as that. you've got to step up to the plate. You can't do that. Even if you would have said, hey, give me 45 minutes. I know Tom Brady didn't come out right away under his first loss. I know it took him almost an hour to come out and see the media. I mean, he could have done that. He could have just said, hey, I'm not speaking to anybody for an hour. You know, just tone it down and do that. But, you know, that's him. And a lot of people will criticize me or anybody else by you know, being different about it. But I really think maturity is going to build him to a state where he's going to be stronger. And he was also, you know, he needs his circle around him to make him understand that now he is not just Cam Newton. Now he is truly Superman of a brand, and he needs to live up to a level where, you know, sponsorships it takes effect and other things play into business sense. And that's where you need to get into that level. But I think he'll get there. I mean, another trip to the big game, that might, you know, get to that stage where if he wins it, then it cures that. If he loses again, I don't know at this point. I don't know.
Yeah, but, you know, and that's the thing. You know, that's one of the things that I've been hearing a lot of is people sitting back saying, oh, you know, he'll be back. You know, his team will get back there. That's not guaranteed. I mean, you think about it from this aspect. Number one, it seemed to me like this year the chips kind of fell exactly the way they needed to fall for Carolina. They played in a weak division. Their opponents that they played weren't necessarily the strongest. I mean, they did beat some great teams up on the way with Green Bay in the regular season. They beat Seattle in the regular season. But it's not, you know, they didn't have exactly murderer's row. You know, they did take care of business in the playoffs, but it seemed like everything kind of fell their way. They didn't have a whole lot of injuries except for Benjamin at the beginning of the season. So things kind of fell their way. And then you also look at it from this perspective. There was another player a while back. He's a Hall of Famer. He said the same thing. You know, we lost the Super Bowl. He said, I'm not going to worry about it. I'll be back for like four or five of these. He never got back. That's Dan Marino. I mean, Dan Marino played in one Super Bowl. And I bet if you talk to Dan Marino today, it still just eats away at him that when he got his chance to get there, he didn't take advantage of it. You know? So you never know when you're going to get that chance again. I mean, things just may not fall that way. And it's not like the Carolina Panthers have been, you know, the best as far as getting this guy weapons anyway. So who knows if Cam Newton's going to get back. So, you know, I hope they get back. You know, I like the way he plays. I like the way that defense plays. You know, I like that team. But, you know, you can't take these things for granted, and I hope he doesn't. And I don't think he does. I think the guy just literally wants to win, and it's just eating him alive. And, you know, I do feel for him. And this is the Super Bowl. So I do feel for him in that aspect. But, again, you know, I'm sorry. I can't give him a pass too much.
Yeah, I agree with you. You know, the bottom line here is it's a brand new experience for him, for his team, first time here. It's always going to. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say I've played at that stage because I don't think anybody that criticizes or is in the media has ever played at a big stage like that. So you really can't relate to that. But the end result is that he's going to get better as an individual. Number one, and number two, he obviously understands that it's going to take more than just, you know, some dabbing and some celebration throughout the season, that the real season starts when you make the playoffs. And at that point, it's one and done. And I think once he realizes that, you know, he's going to get ready for that season. So that's really where you have to credit all the great quarterbacks, you know, from Montana to Peyton now, to Brady, to every quarterback that's come before him that has been great in terms of the, you know, playoffs. They understand that the second season is the only thing that matters. Because if you get in, it doesn't matter. It's 0-0, and you got to just win a bunch of games. And you got to, you know, one done. And I really, to your point, I think they just took it for granted. They got here. They were having a great time. They were all enthusiastic about it. But they forgot to scout the opponent correctly. They forgot about how much hunger and how much sacrifice. You're talking Denver losing 48-8. When you lose literally to a zero mark on your end of contribution, I think a lot of players will turn around and go, we're never feeling this ever again. And I think that's where the Denver defense showed up like that. They had that eye of the tiger.
Well, then you also have to give the Hall of Famer John Elway some credit, because he saw that, you know, he sat in that press box, in that luxury box, and watched the team that he was the GM of just get destroyed. And that didn't sit well with him, you know. And he saw how, the Seattle defense just basically just ran roughshod over his Peyton Manning and that vaunted offense. I mean, Peyton Manning had a record year with 55 touchdowns, like 5,500 yards. I mean, it was crazy. And 8 points against Seattle. And it's just like, at that point, he was like, listen, I need to get a better defense. Now, even though Chris Harris and Von Miller didn't play in that game, I still need to get a better defense. He went out and he got DeMarcus Ware. They got Malik Jackson in there. They've drafted him. Derek Wolfe, they also drafted him as well. I mean, these are guys that you bring in there, you put some speed at the linebacker position. He kind of modeled his team after Seattle, and it's good that you spoke to that earlier about, you know, that this is what that team reminded you of. And I think that Elway modeled his team after that, those guys. So you got to give him credit to sit back and realize, even as, you know, as a quarterback, you would think that he would kind of lean toward making, you know, offensive decisions and, you know, bolstering the offense. But instead, he went the other way around, because he knows, as a veteran in this game, that's what wins you championships.
Now, Troy, when you write the story or you read the story, it's Jim Fox did not do a bad job to get to that stage. But he sort of, in a way, blew up the coaching staff. And to me at the time when that happened, I was like, wow, bold move. You know what I mean? And to bring in your buddy, Kubiak, who in Houston was, I wouldn't say struggling, but, you know, he was getting to that level where he was getting consistent play, and you got J.J. Watt and everybody else. And then you bring in Wade Phillips. So when I heard Wade Phillips was announced to come to Denver, you know what the Phillips family brings in terms of schemes for you know, defenses. So it was just, that was the piece, I think, if you really think about it, because I don't think it was really Kubiak, because Kubiak already had Manning at the helm, which is, you know, a plus and a bonus. But the defense, when you bring in Wade Phillips, and you have Wade Phillips basically have all these guys, like you said, that were hungry, coming off an injury, you know, felt that loss. I mean, you put that into perspective, and these guys just decided to just, you know, man up, breathe football, and that's what you saw on Super Bowl 50. You saw a display of, you know, aggressive defensive ball that took over I wouldn't say a juggernaut offensive, you know, team, but they took over the best team, obviously, this past year in the NFL, and they basically put them at a non-existent factor in the game.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that, definitely. I mean, they, you know, did a heck of a job this entire year, I mean, just putting this whole thing together. So, just my hats is off to the Broncos. I mean, especially the way that they played and the way they conducted themselves. And, you know, they just – that's just the way you do it. So, I think this league, you know, again, this is like a cliche, this is a copycat league. Think about it. The last three Super Bowls have been either – the last three Super Bowl winners have been defensive efforts or huge defensive plays at the end, you know, with Malcolm Butler last year and the way the Broncos played this year in Seattle 3 years ago. I mean, this is the way it's going to start to go. So, I mean, it's that actually bodes really well for your Rams, because, I mean, they have probably, if not the best or the second best front four in the game right now. So that bodes very well for those guys coming up. So as soon as they start solidifying other positions, you know, maybe they need a few safeties out there. I mean, the Rams could be ready to go, but you definitely need a quarterback out there, man. So, and it's the same thing with my team, with the Redskins. We haven't been a defensive team in forever. You know, I don't remember the last great defensive team that the Redskins have had. But, you know, we got Scott McLuhan. He's starting to go toward that. I think the league is starting to put more of a premium on, hey, let's get some defensive players out here, even though the league is really wanting to push this narrative of, offense, 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 points, 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 because that's what's bringing viewership to this.
Yeah, and it's a key. You got to have a balance. We talked about it before. It's a basic fundamental of football. You know, great special teams, good defensive coverages, and obviously a balanced offense will always overcome anything else. So that's really what happened. I mean, and even Denver's offense, you know, with the mishaps that they had, because obviously Carolina had pretty good pressure, it was really a defensive game on both sides of the ball. And you got to give credit. Carolina's defense did come to play. They held Denver offense as well, no different than Denver held Carolina. But credit to Denver for making more plays and creating more opportunities than the Panther defense. So it was just amazing. To me, it was a great game to watch because that's what football is all about. It's not the offensive scoring. It's great. That celebration's amazing and everything else. But I don't think we give the defensive players enough credit when we play a game. When they play a game like this, we get to see, you know, off the snap, we get to see the overpowering of the offensive player, you know, to the side. I mean, you see brute force at its best, and I think a lot of people miss out on that sometimes. They're focused so much focus on, you know, the throws and the catches and all this stuff that they forget about, you know, the vital piece that you still have to have a defense to be even competitive or even relevant in this league. And so a lot of teams don't have that, and that's why they are not as great as some other teams. Everybody can catch our podcast on ultimatesportstalk.com and right here on Blog Talk Radio anytime. So after the show today, whenever you get time, feel free to chime us on and we'll be on for you. Please share our post on Facebook at Gridiron Beauties. Check out our new Aaron Gipford Designs. Thank you to Aaron for supporting our project. You can use the Shop Now tab on our Facebook, or you can link it on Twitter. And thanks to Aaron Gifford for her support and efforts. You can follow her on Twitter at Aaron_designer. And we have a couple designs on our shop right now rotating through. We also have a special going through Valentine's Day. It's a love tank top. So you can get it on our Twitter feed, or you can go directly to our store at Zazzle.com/Gridiron Beauties. And you can check it out. Every item sold helps us spotlight another talented player or players in the ladies' gridiron game. Just like Christy Moran, Lauren Evans of Gridiron Queensland, Kristen Moore, and Stacey Spears of Gridiron New South Wales. So looking forward to them, actually, as we speak about them. We're going to be covering the first historic women's Australian Outback camp as their journey is towards the 2017 IFAB Women's World Championship. So they want to basically create the team. Australia will be a participant at the IFAB 2017 Championship. And two of our amazing supporters hopefully will make the squad. At this point, we don't know yet, but if they do, hats off to them. And I will be very gracious for all their efforts. Save big daily coats at Zazzle, plus use Zazzle Black for free shipping. It's about $10. You can't beat it domestically in the U.S., and you know how hard shipping costs are online. So for $10 for the whole year, you can get free shipping. So it's a great deal. Get details at Zazzle.com. Get our Facebook page for the latest specials as well. You can go there as well. So, Troy, let's go to the women's recap before we get out of here. And Gridiron Queensland, let's go down to Queensland. We just talked about it briefly here, so let's go there.
The Women's National Outback Team trials for this weekend. Just a big update there. With Jim Welter and the USA football coaches assisting the Australia National Squad Development Camp to prepare for the 2017 championship. Now, our Lauren Evans and Kristen Moran will be there taking selfies and, you know, giving real-time updates, so keep an eye out for that. Gridiron Queensland is looking for volunteers for the upcoming season in 2016 as well, so you can visit gridironqueensland.com if you want to get more details for that. Gridiron Victoria Women's new season is starting on February 13th. That's this weekend. February 14th as well. And it'll be going through April, with the Vic Bowl scheduled to be played on April 30th, 2016. And you can contact them on Twitter at Gridiron Vic for more details. Visit Women's Gridiron Leagues of Australia on Facebook, or you can go on Twitter, the Women's Gridiron, for the latest news for the Australian offseason.
So a reminder, LGL Sunday Night Football via Foxtel 183 in Australia in January for the new upcoming games. We thought we were going to get the schedule at this point. It has not been released. So we'll look forward to the Ladies Gridiron League to give us that information. The West Coast Angels, Angels running back Brittany Ware and quarterback Tegan Brown combined for an offensive assault of 46-6 as they beat Brisbane about a week ago. And now we'll move to meet Canberra Mustangs this Saturday, February 13th. Canberra Mustangs behind Danny DeGroot will try to advance versus a talented Angel squad, also seeking revenge against the top-ranked Phoenix. So the winner of the Mustangs versus Angels matchup this weekend, February 13th, will take on the Phoenix Adelaide, who await the winner of this match for the final. The inaugural LGL title will be February 27th. The Adelaide Phoenix, alongside Lisa Fife, versus the winner of the February 13th match. So Angels versus Mustangs, crucial matchup this weekend, and we will see who will be in the first LGL title against the Phoenix. Get LGL coverage by the Crunch magazine on game days, and you can also follow the LGL End Zone. Ratty, awesome job he does for game day updates and broadcasts all season long, plus LGL AUST on Twitter. You can visit the LGL website right now to get your tickets for this upcoming weekend, Mustangs versus Angels in Canberra, ladiesgridiron.com for tickets and details. So let's go to LFL, Troy.
Monique Gaxiola, the Hall of Famer, she was inducted, and she'll be featured on Fifth Down discussing her new book, the new look, Temptation, without top five quarterback Ashley Salerno. She retired this offseason, so, you know, she's not going to be playing this year, but hopefully, you know, she'll change her mind at some point and come back, you know, bless us with her presence. But in the meantime, LA has added new ATL, the Atlanta Steam, the standouts, and Sarah Johnson, who Coach Tui spoke to earlier, Jane Caldwell, and Seattle Miss Katie Findlay. The training camp will decide the final roster, and that'll be decided pretty soon. It'll be on February 27th, so we'll keep an update on that one. The Atlanta Steam latest update, quarterback Dakota Hughes and Laura Ziegler, they look to return, plus the additions of Amanda Ruler from the L.A. Steam, now added the depth of the offense with all-fantasy wide receiver Teresa Petrozula and Heather Hudson. Now, on defense, Coach Robinson will see Coco Montgomery, Charlene Fuller, and Leanne Harden compete for roster spots this year. And for more updates, you can follow our Facebook page, and you can check it out for Mike Del Rios for Steam updates. For the latest news, follow LFL360.com or on Legends Football League on Facebook. And also wanted to give you some update about the U.S. women's news. Reminder that women's football games, the Women's World Football Games 3 at the New Orleans Saints facility, that'll be on March 1st through the 6th. In 2016. You can get the details on our Facebook page, or you can visit the website usafootball.com/women's-world-football-games. That's a lot to remember, but you know what? Go ahead and run it back if you need to. I'll say it again, usafootball.com/women's-world-football-games. Now, the Utah Girls Football League is now taking registrations for their second season in 2016. You can check their website at www.utahgirlstackle.com. And also on their Facebook page, Utah Girls Tackle Football League. You can follow them on Twitter at UT Girls Tackle. You can also follow at WWCFL or at MWFLF Football for 2016 schedules. You can visit their Facebook page, Western Women's Canadian Football League, and MWFL site. And you can visit their website at mwfl.pointstreaksites.com. And the Sugar and Spice Football League news, their trials will be this weekend also on February 13th, the Las Cruces Coyotes and the El Paso Envy. You can get details and information at the website at www.sugarandspicefootball.com/tryouts. Oscar, you want to give some WFA news?
All right, WFA, Victorious Film featuring the 2015 DC Divas championship season was at Indigo. At this point, it has ended, but you can direct message and follow at Victorious the Film on Twitter for more details on how you can still help out with donations to make sure that we get the film to be a reality. 2016 season schedules are now on in the U.S. leagues at both websites. So you can follow at WFA Football and at IWFL for the links to the schedules. So we'll be talking pretty much a schedule for these two leagues in the next coming weeks here and dissecting the top matchups as well. So we'll look forward to that. WFA trading cards are being produced for the 2016 season by Doji Mello featuring WFA stars. You can visit WFAcards.com and search for your favorite team, player, or regional superstar. Catch the latest WFA Nation series where we're talking women's gridiron topics and how to improve the sport as a whole. You can visit WFANation.com, WFANation.com. You can go to G.I. Quindom at G.I. Quindom on Twitter or G.I.Quindom.com and check out all the amazing stories of talented young ladies playing no-joke football. So G.I.Quindom.com. Let's go to FIFA Spain right now. Spanish League, female league results. Opening match was a rematch of the 2015 clash of the La Rosa Black Demons taking on the Barbera Rookies. Rookies get the revenge for the 2015 title loss by beating the Demons 19-6 on Saturday. On Sunday, the debut of the Pioneers of Las Granadas taking on the Badalona Dragon Girls. Pioneers shut out Badalona 48-0 in impressive offensive fashion. Dragons Girls continue their losing campaign from 2015. In Game 3, the Barcelona Buffaloes defeated the Teresa Reds 8-2 in a tough defensive battle. The Reds are coming off an impressive 2015 but get edged here early in the season. Week 2 will be this weekend, February 13th and 14th, Valentine's weekend of all weekends in Spain. Visit the website at www.fifa.es, FEFA.es, for previews on our Facebook page as well, and as well as our partners, NFL Hispano and the Field Goal _ EU. We'll have previews up to the building game. So as tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday, you should check out our links on Twitter and Facebook for the preview for week 2 of the Spanish League. FIFA _ Spain, you can follow them on Twitter all season long, and you can also use the hashtag LNFA Femenina, LNFA Femenina, to keep update on all the updates that are coming up on the weekend. Troy, go ahead and a reminder to let everybody know where they can visit our shop.
Yes, I'm here.
So I'll take it over.
Reminder to visit our Zazzle shop through Thursday, February 11th, 2016. You can get 15% off of our Love Red Tank. You can use code ZAZZWALLGIFT, that's ZAZZ, Wall Gift, at www.zazzle.com/gridironbeauties. You can also follow us on Twitter at Gridiron Beauty and on our Facebook page. And Gridiron Beauties for the number one source for covering women's tackle football 24/7. Use the hashtag NoJokeFootball.
Don't forget to like us on Instagram. Our page is blowing up on Instagram. We use the hashtag on Twitter and Instagram, NoJokeFootball, on your post to get the buzz going. Check out the amazing and talented women playing American football globally. So if you want to be featured on our Instagram gallery, make sure you're using the hashtag. We look for it all the time. And if we think it's relevant to the week and make sure that it's awesome looking, you get posted on our gallery. So you'll be surprised when you get posted. So thanks, everybody, for using the hashtag NoJokeFootball. And we continue to spread the word about how everybody's playing great girls American football globally. Thank you, everybody, for that. And all our partners, I would like to thank hashtag I Like a Girl, hashtag This Girl Can. And then we have a brand new campaign, Champion Her, hashtag Champion Her. So we'll be using that as well on our Twitter feed and also our Instagram. So thanks, everybody, for supporting our project. If you want to be on the show, just email us at gridironbeauties@gmail.com, gridironbeauties@gmail.com. And we can get the word out on your team, league, or profile a player towards this 2016 in the U.S. and Canada. So please give us a shout out if that's the case on social media, or you can email us as well, or you can do a direct message on either links on social media. So go to GA Quindam and check out all the amazing stories of our of talented young ladies playing football and no joke football as well. So you can follow them as well for interactive stories there. Follow at Women's Gridiron and at JarsLive46 for the latest news on Australia and FX Mexico scene. And don't forget, the NFL is over, but Troy, myself, and Kishi, obviously we got OTAs, mini camps, everything else down the board coming up. So we'll still be talking football all through the summer.
And the draft.
So, and the draft, which that's going to be a big one. The draft probably going to be bigger than anything this year. Follow at Kishi's Cuties, Troy Wilson underscore one. And don't forget to follow at PathFangirl12 at gridirongirl.org for her NFL pro talk. And then Fit for Life for NFL talk as well. So that's Eric Brown. So for Troy Wilson, Oscar Lopez, we'll see you here next week where we have another opportunity to talk football. And then we're going to dive into the women's game, March, April, all the way down to August. It's going to be an exciting season. We got coming up, we got Spain in the mix. Germany's going to kick off. The Swedish leagues are kicking off. Australia is into the national camps here. And then we have both U.S. leagues kicking off as well as two Canadian leagues. And then we're going to have Mexico as well. So, Troy, internationally, we're going to be talking football on the women's side. So that's pretty exciting.
Hey, as long as it's football, I'm happy with it. That's my game right there. Look, I gotta love the sport.
And then we also got college coming up soon here as well, down the road here, mid through the year. So a lot of football to talk about. But thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We really appreciate it. Coach Tui, thank you very much for your time today. We look forward to the LA Temptation Seattle Mist matchup that's going to come up in April at Legends Football League. So I know he's excited because it's a new change. Everything's changed for the LA Temptation, but he's excited for the new brand that's coming up and the new staff that he's going to get in, all the awesome players that he's got to choose from. It's got to be hard, Troy. I mean, to narrow it down from 40 to 20 and so much talent, that just got to wear you down as a coach, right?
Yeah, right. The more talent you have, the easier your job becomes. I mean, the only thing you have to do at that point is manage your feelings. But, I mean, I think the way he looks at things is if you're not playing in one position, you can definitely help out with another. So I think he can manage it pretty well, especially, you know, winning the title three times, talking about a guy who knows what he's doing. So can't wait to watch it. I'll be following him all this season, so I can't wait to see how everything pans out for this team.
All right. So for Troy Wilson, Oscar Lopez, and for the absent and Kishi Free, we will see you here next week right here on Gridiron Beauties on Block Talk Radio and at UltimateSportsTalk.com. Have a great night, everybody.
Have a great night, guys.